So we are at an interesting time in the calendar, which is going to give us an opportunity to reflect on a couple of different ideas, and we'll end on one that is most important to me. But to do that, I want to begin outright on page one with a comment of the Tosefta, which is going to begin our discussion from a pasuk in Zechariah. That's always a big winner, you know, starting with Zechariah, the most difficult Navi, no one ever. Even the Navi Zechariah describes that he doesn't know what he's seeing in his vision. So we're going to do our best. The pasuk says a line that Rabbi Akiva darshaned for us. You see here in the Tosefta, in the sixth parak in Sota, Darash Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva darshaned the following. Harei Omer, it says the pasuk in Zechariah, Ko amar Hashem, so says the Ribbono Shel Olam, Tzom HaRevi'i, the fast of the fourth, V'tzom HaChamishi, and the fast of the fifth, V'tzom HaShvi'i, the fast of the seventh, V'tzom HaAsiri, the fast of the tenth, they will be days, you, L'sason, L'simcha, they're going to be celebratory days. In the future, those 4 days, which are right now on the calendar marked as fast days, in the future, they're going to be days of celebration. That's what it says in the pasuk in Zechariah. Let's take this, pass this down to Jim. Okay. So what are these fast days? This is one of the earliest sources that teach us about the Arba Tzomos. So Rabbi Akiva says, Tzom HaRevi'i, the fourth fast, that is, in the bracket, Yud Zayin B'Tammuz. That's Shavasa B'Tammuz. Why we observe a fast on Shavuos B'Tammuz, was the Tosefta saying? That's right. The city was breached. Why is it called V'lama Nikra Shmo Revi? Why is it called the fast of the fourth? The fourth fast. The answer is? That's right. That's exactly what the Tosefta says. Nachat says, Tzoma Chamishi. What is that? Why? Because Yom Shenisraf Bo Beis HaMikdash. Why is it called the Chamishi? Again, the fifth month. Tzoma Shvi, the seventh month. That's, what do we call that? We call that colloquially, Tzom Gedalia. Right, Tzom Gedalia. That's the third of Tishrei. Yom Shenera Bo Gedalia Ben Achikam. That was the day that Gedalia was assassinated. Although it's interesting, there are some who suggest that Gedalia was actually assassinated on Rosh Hashanah, but you can't make a fast day on Rosh Hashanah, so they pushed it off till the day after. And then the last one, Tzom HaAsiri, third to the last line of the page in Tosefta, Ze Asar B'Tevis. That's tomorrow. Why is that observed as a fast day? Shebo samach melech bavel es yodo al Yerushalayim. That the Babylonian king, as he quotes in the pasuk in Yizkeskel, vahi dvar Hashem elai bashana hachiyas bachodesh ha'asiri. That's the source. The reason we're going to fast tomorrow is because the pasuk says in Yechezkel, that was the day that the melech bavel encircled, he laid siege, he attacked Yerushalayim.
Just clarification, because yes. I always get confused. So both Bat HaMikdash are destroyed in Tisha B'Av.
Yes.
But as far as Asar B'Teves and Shavuos B'Tammuz, that's just by Rishon.
So the Gemara actually in Tanis has a discussion about the breaching of the walls in the Bayis Sheni, how they knew that, if they had a tradition about that, or that's just an assumption. But in the case of the encircling, that was Dafka, the Bayis Rishon. Exactly. So what's just in a footnote as everybody's getting settled, you'll notice on the bottom, Rabbi Akiva actually thought we should fast on the fifth of Teves, Chamisha B'Teves, which is when they got news in Bavel, because Yechezkel was prophesying in Bavel. So they got news in Bavel that the Beis HaMikdash had been destroyed, so he actually thought that we should have the fast this past, what day is today? Today's the 9th, today's Monday, so it would have been some end of last week. Chamisha, but that's not how we paskin.
Tonight's Yud.
Right, tonight is Yud. So yes, today was 10. Today was 9th. So Sunday was 8th. Shabbos was 6th, 7th. So it would have been last Thursday. But we don't paskin like Rabbi Akiva, but that was his drasha. So this is the beginning of what is the discussion that we see in Shulchan Aruch on page number 2. Michael, there are packets here, so we can pass you back also. Page number 2, this is what is most famous to us, what we know. This din is Shulchan Aruch. The first halach and Hilchos Tisha B'Av Ishar Tanios, chayovim l'his'anos, a person is obligated to fast on Tisha B'Av, Yud Zayin B'Tamuz Kimol Tishrei U'Ba'Asara B'Teves Mipnei HaDvarim HaRoim She'eru Bahem. Because of the bad things that happened on these days. So now we know what the history of these things was based on the Tosefta. Okay? So if someone asks you why we're fasting tomorrow for starters because on that day Melech Bavel encircled Yerushalayim. That's one date. So for those who are just joining us, we're going to reflect now on the period of time which we are in. We're starting with Asar B'Teves, but as we will see, it's actually much more interesting and much more complicated than just that. So that's the simple pshat. And when we're kids growing up, that's what we all know. That's the famous din. That's what we do. But it becomes much more interesting, even just in terms of Asar B'Teves itself. And this is worthy of a whole further discussion. But if you look, there is a terrific set of Svarim by a scholar by the Talmud Chacham by the name of Rabbi Yisrael Yaakovson called Nesiv Bina. I think it was published in the 70s. It's a well-known set of Svarim on the Siddur. If you look in the third section of the Nesiv Bina, he has on the following page a copy of what they call a choveret, a pamphlet that was published, flipped the packet to the third page. This is from the third volume of Nesiv Bina, where he copies here a choveret, you see in the underline, Shehutzio HaRabanut HaRashit Bishnat Tov Shin Tes Zion. What is the koteret of this choveret? HaKoteret Shal HaChoveret Hi Yom HaKadish. Rabbi, what is this referring to? It's Yom HaKadosh HaKloli.
Yes, this is the day for the Yortzites, those who perished during the Holocaust.
That's right.
Yes, the official day of...
According to the Rabbanut. It's very interesting, and we don't have time tonight to go into the whole history of it. But before the State of Israel established the 27th day of Nisan, which is what's called today Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura, before that, Rav Herzog and the chief rabbinate established a different day. It's tomorrow. Tomorrow, in Israel, in many shuls, they follow this nusach, which is recorded here in the Nesiv Bina from the Rabbanut. I didn't have a chance. I was going to check the Shana B'Shana for this year, what they publish. But and there is it's a very complicated, the best word, history of how the Rabbanut established one day to observe the memory of the Holocaust, and then the Knesset decided on a different day, which is a whole story in and of itself. But the idea originally was that there was not going to be, although Rav Herzog had thought maybe at one time that there would be, but the Chazon Ish was very opposed to it, and the Brisker Rav was opposed to it, Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik, was opposed to making a new day for observing the Holocaust victims. So originally they decided that Asar B'Teves was going to be observed for anybody who had relatives whose yahrzeit was unknown, and even Ad HaYom HaZeh, they have a whole Seder of things, which is what you see on the right side. First they say, Yom Asir B'Teves is established for remembering the men, the women, the children, for the millions of people who were killed. She'ein smuchim l'kfiyas yomosam, kodesh yom ze l'zichrom. People who don't know when their relatives were taken, because some people, they know. You know, Yad Vashem has extensive records. A lot of people, they know. If people, their relatives were taken on a train at a certain day, the Germans kept very close records. If they went to, let's say, at the end of the war, in the fall, most of the Hungarian Jews were sent to Auschwitz. Most of it, it's more or less accurate when they, but a lot of people, it's hard to know how long they lived in a certain place or when they spent time in that camp. So they established this for what? For their relatives, for Yom HaMisa, for Amiras Kaddish, Limud Mishnayis, and Hadlokas Ner Neshama. And you see at the bottom, it's signed by Rabbanut, which was Rav Yitzchak Isaac Alevi Herzog and Rav Yitzchak Nisim. So that is another aspect of the calendar which is being observed. And then you see on the left side, they have the special Kaddish, which was recited for people who passed away. And this is another aspect. But this is just the aspect of the fast that we're going to have tomorrow of Asar B'Teves. That everybody knows. But there is another fast day, actually two. And these are referred to colloquially as Atanas Tzadikim. Atanas Tzadikim. What is Atanas Tzadikim? There are certain righteous people who, out of sensitivity to various historical events, would fast on certain days that none of the rest of us, at least I growing up, I never heard of these days. But they actually appear in Shulchan Aruch on the next page, on page 4. And the Shulchan Aruch, they tell you, these are special days of Tanis Tzadikim. That's here, this is in Simen Tov Kuf Pei, in Se'if Beis. By the way, in Se'if Gimel, there is another, I mean, this is a really astonishing minhag, that some would have the practice of fasting every Monday and Thursday. Did you ever hear of this?
Outside of
by every Monday and Thursday. So there is, if you're interested in this, I never saw anybody in my life who does this, but there is an amazing book I have at home. It's called Es Haleich. It's been translated into English, called I Will Live. It's written by a very accomplished business person in Israel. I think he built a business around insurance or something. A very successful businessman who as a child was on an iron lung because he contracted polio and then survived two battles with cancer. And it's a whole amazing life story. And he describes in this book, his name is... Oh, now it escapes me. What is his name? Oh, I forget. Anyway, in his autobiography about his incredible life, which is really very remarkable, he describes that his parents were Holocaust survivors and they came to Israel. And only later in life did he realize his father was a Chassidish Holocaust survivor, that his father fasted every Monday and Thursday, his whole life. And apparently, among other European Jews, was not so uncommon. Now, I'm sure some European Jews fasted Monday and Thursday because they didn't have anything to eat. But this was a thing. And that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. There are those, you can imagine what high spiritual level. We'll have to look online afterwards what the title of this, the name of the person who wrote this book is. But it's an amazing book. If you're looking for something very inspiring, it was a very, very amazing book. So he describes that his father was a Holocaust survivor from Europe, Chassidish survivor who fasted every Monday and Thursday. So that's in Sif Gimel. But in Sif Beis, the Shulchan Aruch says, let me tell you a couple of dates. Now, where these dates are coming from is going to be important in a minute. But take a look. In the underline, in this middle section, Shulchan Aruch says, there were two other days. Bishmona B'Teves, there were people who would fast on the 8th of Teves. And then in the next page, next underline, U'B'Tishabo, on the 9th day of Teves, some people would fast. 8th, 9th, and 10th. So why were they fasting 8th, 9th, and 10th? So let's start with the 9th. U'b'tishabo, tishabo, on the 9th day, lo noda ezohi hatzara she'irabo. We don't know what happened. But there is something that happened on the 9th of Teves, today, for which tzaddikim used to fast. It's very mysterious. Very odd. So the Taz, Reb David, the commentary, the Reb David Alevi, right here on the commentary, he says, in the underline, the top, he says, Tema, what are you talking about? Gedola, ha'isa b'slichas shalasar b'tevis. Tomorrow we're going to say in slichas that one of the things we're commemorating, you see it's in the underline, the top right, is debetesbo, today, what happened? Ezra HaSofer passed away. And Ezra HaSofer was such a great revolutionary giant rabbinic figure that we should establish a fast in his memory. He brought people back to Israel. The Chazal view him as if he was a Nosin HaTorah like Moshe Rabbeinu. It was a great revolutionary figure, so we should fast. So the Taz says, the Shulchan Aruch, what do you mean we don't know why we're going to fast? Tzaddikim are going to fast on the 9th of Teves. We know very well it's the yahrzeit of Ezra HaSofer. And it's not uncommon already in the times of the Gemara for people to observe a yahrzeit with a fast. I don't know how many people do that here. You do that?
No, my father did.
Your father did that.
I'm not doing it.
But in our family, we actually do the opposite. I think by many chassidim, my father used to do a siyum or a tikkun in the morning in shul. Yeah. But in the Shulchan Aruch, and it's already in the times of the Gemara, Nedarim, people would fast on a yahrzeit.
not Litvak.
What's that?
Litvak fast.
Right, they fast, like it says in Shulchan Aruch, like it says in the Gemara. The Gemara in the Nedarim alludes to the fact that people would fast on the day that their parent passed away. So the Taz says, what do you mean the Shulchan Aruch? You don't know, of course. The answer is that there's a mystery here. It's not so simple. Where did the Shulchan Aruch get this list of fast days that are being observed? And the answer is, there is a mysterious text, and it's called Megillas Tainis. Now, this Megillas Tainis is not the Megillas Tainis you're thinking of. Michael Daniel's thinking, oh, I know Megillas Tainis. Everybody knows Megillas Tainis. It's the Beferish Gemara and Rosh Hashanah and other places in Shas. You're right, but this is the other Megillas Tainis. You see, the Megillas Tainis that appears referenced in the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, it's almost a euphemism, because those are days that are celebratory. So the Gemara has a whole bunch of days, like Hanukkah, that in the times of Chazal, they codified them as, these are days which we're going to celebrate. There's no fast days, there's no Tanis, there's no Hesped. They're going to be days of celebration. But after the Chasimah Satalma, there is another document that is referred to as Megillas Tanis. It's not written in Aramaic, it's written in Hebrew. We don't know the exact dating of it. But that is the origin of this list. This unknown, mysterious document. So if you look on page 5, here you have an edition of this Megillas Tanis in Hebrew. In the underline, on the bottom, it says, B'Tisha B'Av, on the ninth day of Tammuz, Lo Kasvu Rabbeinu Amahu. The Rabbanim did not tell us why we fast on the ninth of Teves. This is the Megillas Tanis. This is actually the list of fast days. So the Megillas Tanis in Rosh Hashanah that Chazal are referring to, that's the day, actually days of celebration. This is the days of Tanios. So you see in the Megillas Tanis, it says, we don't know why we fast on the ninth day of Teves. And then he says, right after the underline, Ubo Bayom Meis Ezra HaKoin V'Nechemia Ben Chachalia. On that day, Ezra, and according to this edition, Nechemia also died. They had the same yard site. Tes Tevis for their yard site. So now we understand why the Shulchan Aruch wrote what he wrote. He knew what the Taz said. He knew that on the ninth day of Tevis was the yard site of Ezra. He knew that. But the Megillas Tainis also knew that. And it's still saying there's some other secret reason. So this is very interesting, at least to me. So, okay, so maybe it has something to do with that there's, Yechiel's alluding to the fact that when Ezra called people to go on Aliyah, people were not very forthcoming, which is a whole criticism in and of itself. So how did I get interested in this? Because years ago, and it's probably on YU Torah now, there was a shiur that was given by Dr. Schneer Lyman. And Cousin Schneer pursued this, and then I'm like, oh, he probably has an article on it, which he does. So I went to find the article online, and it was published. you don't have it in front of you. I have it. It's like 30 pages. If you want, I can email it to you. Or you can get it on his website, LymanLibrary.com. You go all the way to the bottom, you press on the publications, and get all the amazing articles. And this was published in 1983 in the Jewish Quarterly Review, The Scroll of Fasts, The Ninth of Teves, by Sid Z. Lyman, Brooklyn College. So Dr. Lyman has an entire article on this mystery of why we're fasting, or people, tzaddikim, would fast on the ninth day of Teves. So he quotes several suggestions among different achronim. Of course, he quotes the Taz and the Magen Avram and the Chidah. But then he quotes something that I thought was just so interesting that I never knew anything about. And that is on your next page. Go to page 6. He quotes this from Rav Baruch Frankel to Umim, from a manuscript that you're looking at in front of you, which also appears in a similar sefer by Rav Aaron Worms, the rabbi of Metz from the 19th century. something called a sefer, what you see here, Sipur of Ish Ploni Almoni Hayadua. Who would be a Jewish person who has a historical, very important historical role, who we don't want to name by his name? Or in the edition at the bottom, Maisa Shel.
Was a Yibam, the whole with the
Rus. Yeshu. Who is this? Jesus. There is something called, this text that was going around in the Middle Ages called the story of Toldos Yeshu. Toldos Yeshu. And you're looking at two different manuscripts that I found online from two different auction houses. So I just took a little, I did not buy them. I just took screenshots so you could see. Asher ha'umos, you see on the top one, Ish Ploni Almoni, they don't want to say his name. Asher in the tiny letters, ha'umos shebeminasenu, the people were living amongst this chevra, toim acharav, they follow him. They're the minim, the Christians. This is the Jewish story of Yeshu. It's called Toldos Yeshu. We don't know exactly when Toldos Yeshu first appeared, but in this work, the Toldos Yeshu, which is a tradition, a legend, there is a hero of this book, and his name is Shimon, either Shimon HaKalpos or Shimon HaKalfoni. And this person is the hero of Toldos Yeshu because he is somehow, and Dr. Lyman gives you in the footnotes the Shtickel Torah about this, some kind of composite of, and I'm not knowledgeable at all about Christianity, but apparently this figure who appears in Toldos Yeshu is a composite of Paul, Simon Peter, not to be confused from singers in the 1970s, Saul, Paul, Simon Peter, and Simeon Stylites. Is called Shimon Kalfa or Shimon Kepha. And what was his job? His job was to infiltrate the community of Jewish Christians and drive a wedge between Christianity and Judaism. Because, and maybe this has something to do with the bracha of Valam al Shinim that we say in the Shmon Esrei about heretics, at the time of the beginnings of Christianity, there was a tremendous amount of confusion. Because how would you know if somebody was a Jew who believed in God or a Jew who believed in Yeshu? Because people... Jesus was Jewish, and many of the followers were practicing Jews. So you had this tremendous confusion. So according to this legend of Toldos Yeshu, they assigned this Shimon Kalfoni, who became, became the Bishop of Rome, to preach Gentile Christianity. What was Gentile Christianity? That all you need to do is believe, and then you're saved. But you don't. The laws don't apply anymore. After Yashka, there's no practical law. You just believe. And what did that accomplish? That accomplished winnowing out all of the Judeo-Christians and the real Jews to the point where Jews who were faithful to the Torah would stay in this side, and the people who were going to go follow the Galochim, they're going to go on the other side, and he was considered to be a hero. According to this tradition, this Rav Shimon HaKalpos, Shimon HaKalfoni, suggestion is that his yard site, according to some sources, is the mysterious yard site of the ninth of Tevis.
So this guy, who was
a bishop,
who saved Jews by pushing them away from going to Christianity, he is, for that, we say thank you, and we fast. That's right. What he's saying.
That's right. Which is wild. That's pretty wild. Right? His mission was to maintain the integrity of Judaism. He basically sacrificed his life going off to live as a Christian and dying as a Christian. But we should all remember, Ladori Doros, that this Jew who was Moser Nefesh, according to the direction of the Chachamim, was a righteous person. Now, it's not conclusive. He says it's a theory, but it appears in two Achronim. But based on this, we can understand why would it be that in the Megillas Tanis, the Hebrew Megillas Tanis, that's probably sometime from Eretz Yisrael in the period of the Gaonim, why do you think they would write that we don't know the reason for this fast? It was a secret, because you weren't going to advertise to Christian censors that were remembering the day that there was actually one Yiddish schnook who infiltrated Rome to break the whole tradition of Christianity away from Judaism. That's not a popular thing to do, especially if you're living in Christian medieval Europe, when they didn't need an excuse to kill you. They just killed you for no reason. So this is just a fascinating episode, if this is true. And Dr. Lyman concludes the article that it's still a mystery, but there are other, he quotes another source, but it's not old enough to be authoritative, who dates the death of Shimon HaKalfoni with the 9th of Teves, and connecting that, which is an even more interesting layer, with the 25th of December.
What was the same day, maybe?
So it may have been the same day. So all these things, Ayin Shum, in this article, I'm happy to send it to you. It's really quite fascinating. So you have the piece about the Churban Beis HaMikdash. You have the piece about the Holocaust. You have the reference to the death of Ezra. You now have this other mysterious component, maybe. And Nehemiah and Shimon HaKalponi. So far, we're 2 out of 3. We're not done yet. What about the 8th day of Teves? So the Shulchan Aruch told us, if we go back, let's go back to page 4 in Siman Tov Kuf Pei. B'shmona b'Teves, on the 8th day of Teves, Nichtava HaTorah Yevonis. The Torah was written in Greek, Bimei Talmai HaMelech, in the days of Ptolemy. V'hayachoshech ba'olam shlosha yamim. There was darkness in the world for 3 days. So what is this talking about? So go to page 7. Let's go back to where we are now. The Gemara Megillah tells us the story. The background of this Gemara is that the Gemara is discussing what Sfarim are allowed to be written in which languages. Can you write a Megillah in English and be Yotzi for Kriyas and Megillah? Can you write a Sefer Torah in another language? What about writing it in Greek? So Gemara says, oh, Greek, let me tell you a story about Greek. Here you have it. Maisa, see on the underline here, Gemara, source number 7, Maisa b'Talmai HaMelech, there's a story about the king, his name was Ptolemy. So we know, historically, there was, of course, the Babylonian Empire, and then the Persian Empire, and then after the Persian Empire, they were replaced by the Greek Empire, by Alexander of Macedon, Alexander Mokdon, Alexander the Great, and then he died very young. He died in his 30s, and then after that, it fell apart, and they had different kings, and one of these kings, his name was Ptolemy, with a P. I don't know why they spell his name with a P, but that's how it is. Ptolemy HaMelech, Maisa b'Talmai HaMelech Shekines Shivim Ushnaim Zekenim, that he gathered 72 elders, V'echnisan V'shivim Ushnaim Batim, and he put them in 72 different houses, V'logila Lahem Almakinson. He didn't tell them why he was getting them together. We're having an assembly, I'm not going to tell you why. V'gnichnas etzel kol echad ve'echad, and he went to each one, v'amar lahem kisvuli toras Moshe Rabchem. Write for me the Torah. But meaning, write it in Greek. Because, of course, the Torah was originally written in Hebrew. He wants to write it in Greek. And a miracle happened that nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'lev kol echad ve'echad etzel v'hiskimu kulon l'das achas. They made some very interesting, and that's the Hemshech of this Gemara. The next piece of the Gemara is what they actually did. They actually made changes to the text because they were worried that if the Torah would be translated in the way that it is written literally, it would be misinterpreted. So, for example, our Chumash, the Torah HaKadosh, says, Na'ase Adam, let us make man. But they changed it. They changed it to Greek to say, I will make man. Because if it had been just left to say, let us make man, what would happen? The Rikas say, oh, you also believe in polytheism. And the Gemara says a bunch of other ones, including there is an animal, I think we assume that our nevis, in modern Hebrew, an arnevis is a rabbit. But the Gemara says they took out the arnevis, they changed the name for arnevis, because apparently Ptolemy's wife's name was Arnevis. So they thought that he would think that it's making fun of him, so they took out her name because it's not so bakavadik to the, you know, whatever. That's what the Gemara says in the Amud Beis. So this story, at least the way that it's presented in the Gemara Megillah, it's just a story. It's a story. And the way that the Gemara is emphasizing it here is to see Agdekach, how much Hashkacha Pratis the Rebbe Shlomo had, that each of these 72 Chachamim, each of them had the same insight as to exactly which things to change in the translation, which is very unusual. I mean, you could say it's even miraculous. But you saw from the Shulchan Aruch that this was not a positive thing.
Well, probably when they were taken into the separate houses, they realized this is not good.
Exactly. So. And then the Shulchan Aruch said there was darkness. So take a look on the next page. Look at Maseches Sofrim. Before the story of Talmai HaMelech that we have in our Gemara and Megillah, the Gemara has, the Maseches Sofrim says, look on the top, right before our story, is Maisa B'Chamisha Zekanim. This Maseches Sofrim has first a story with five before the story of the 72. Shekosvu L'Talmai HaMelech HaSatori Yevonis. That they wrote the story, they wrote the Torah, the whole Torah from beginning to end in Greek. V'haya yom kasha li Yisrael, v'haya yom kasha li Yisrael. It was such a difficult day for the Jewish people. K'yom shenasa ha'egel. It was as bad as if the day they had done the golden calf. Which, seriously, that's one of the blackest days in history. Ad kedei kach. So why? What's so problematic? I don't understand. Today, we have incredible gifts. We have art scroll Gemaras. We have now Steinsaltz Gemaras that translate into English. And you could argue, many have argued, that these Sfarim, and then many others, now you have every translation of Chumash and Rashi and Ramban and Mefarshim, they're probably the greatest gift to the Jewish people. How many people now can open a Gemara, any Gemara, and have access to Chochmas HaTalmud that they never would have had? Never. Right? You know better than anyone what an impact, right, the English publication of works of Torah Judaism has had. Certainly know better than I. You know, you've seen the impact on people's lives. It's amazing. And yet, when Chazal looked at this, they said, oh, it's terrible. We're going to make a fast over it. And the Chazal say it was like 3 days of darkness. And darkness here, by the way, is not an accidental reference. Because when the Medrash describes the Gezerah of the Malchus Yavan, Ha'aretz ha'isa so vavo v'choshech, choshech is Yavan. So why? Why are we making a fast? We make a celebration. When they finish the art school Shas, it was a tremendous simcha. When they published the Chumash, I don't know when the JPS Chumash was translated, but years ago, it's an unbelievable thing. People should come to a shul. In old days, you know, in Europe, many people, they had no access to Limud HaTorah. If you weren't from the Yechidei Skula, who went to a yeshiva somewhere, the Hamonam, how much access do people have? They didn't have access. And in America, how much access do people have? Now we have incredible access. You go online, you can go to Sfaria. There's so many translations available on Sfaria. Tons and tons. So what's the pshat? So the last line in this Maseches Sofrim, I think, gives us a perspective, but I think it's much deeper. It's very deep. So the answer here in the second line of Maseches Sofrim is, you know why? Shelo haisa haTorah yichola lehitargem kol tzarka. They weren't, well, literally the way that it's in English, you would say, they weren't capable, they weren't able to adequately translate the Torah completely. That's the way we would say it. If you were to say it in English, that's the way you would say it. But that's not the way it's written. And I think that is written that way for a specific reason. You know, there was a fellow who lived here, Rabbi Yisrael, Zichrono Livracha. If Rabbi Yisrael was reading this sentence, if I had written it, I would get an email back at any hour of the day or night saying that sentence is a disaster on a substantive level. Because what Rabbi Yisrael would say is, you don't put the noun, HaTorah, before the verb, Yechola Lehitargim. He would say this is a terrible sentence. He'd say it's terrible. And we have to rewrite it. That's what he would have said. But I think with the Pshat, even Rabbi Yisrael Zichron Levracha would agree that there's a reason that it's written this way. Because the way I translated it and the way that we write it in English was the noun would be the rabbis were unable to translate it adequately. But the way that it's written here is the Torah was not adequately translated correctly. Why is the Torah in the first spot in the noun? It's out of order. Because I think the Chazal are trying to tell us something deep, which is the following, and you could think about this. What does it mean that the Torah was not capable of adequately being translated in the passive, which he also wouldn't have liked because he didn't like passive sentences? It's because there's something about Torah that doesn't lend itself to translation. Because there are different layers of Torah. There's the pshat, the primary, the basic level of understanding, and that is something that can be translated. But there's something more. There's the pnimius of Torah, the soul of Torah, the depth of Torah. And that does not lend itself to translation. And so when we celebrate the fact that so much of Torah is accessible in English, it's because we come to the English, let's say, you open an English Chumash with the understanding, the assumption that this is just the pshat, or it's a pshat, but there's a lot more to it. But if you go to the Greek king, he says, write me the Torah. You write him the Torah. He says, that's it, shine. That's all there is to it. But that's not true. And the perception, the brokenness of, imagine picking up a book, being the consortium of rabbis, all getting together and having to say to the Greeks, here is our wisdom. They say, this is such wisdom. It's not so wise. Go explain to a Greek king, no, there's a pnimius. He says, pnimius doesn't translate into Greek.
But he's also pshat stukim.
So I don't think it's an issue of, first of all, it's way before the Sadducees. Okay. But I think it's different, and I think it's important because so many times when we learn, we learn at one level, and then we forget that there are deeper levels, that it can reach us in a deeper place, and that it's the Or Hashem. Especially as we get older in life, we sometimes come across ideas or midrashim or ma'amari chazal that maybe we heard when we were younger, and we learned them when we were younger, and it was good. What we understood when we were younger is gone's fine. But then when we get older, we're not supposed to look at them at the same level with the same glasses. It's got to be on a different level of understanding. I'll give you an example. You know, the Gemara says in Megillah that when Basia, Bas Paro, came to the Nile River, and she saw Moshe Rabbeinu, this little basket floating in the river, the Pasuk says, in Shmos, Vatishlach es amasa vatikacheu. So what do we tell the kindergartners happened to Basia Vasparo on the riverbank? What do we tell them? Right, that's what the Gemara says in Megillah. So that's one layer of interpretation. What's the pshat of that pasuk, by the way? The pshat of the pasuk is that an amma is a maidservant. So she had a whole retinue, she had a whole chevra, so she said, one of the girls, go get the child. That's the pshat. Then the first level, the Gemara says, is that her arm outstretched. So that's very cute for children, and you want to tell them it was a miracle, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped her. Great. But then when you get older, you say, well, I don't even know if the Chazal meant us to know that that's what happened, or they meant to teach us a lesson. When you look back, because you could say to someone, you could say, oh, do you know that when Basia Vaspar went to the river, the Gemara has a machlokas, how far her arm stretched, to the end of the table, to the end of the room? Incredibly far. Is that really what happened? Or are Chazal telling you, there's an idea, and we have it in English, it's called extending yourself for someone. Right? On the level of the kindergartner, you teach the child that the Ribbono Shel Olam takes care of Moshe Rabbeinu. But on the level of an adult, what Chazal may be telling you is, this is a woman who grew up living in the house of Pharaoh, who knew that there was an edict against Jewish children, who is going to put herself out there. So the idea of the outstretched arm is a symbol, of what it means to be a human being, to extend yourself for somebody else, and what we're supposed to learn from that. What are Chazal telling us? They're telling us something in a picture that's much more powerful than words. So these are additional layers of learning. You don't get that from just, if you were to translate this for Talmi, you would say, and the daughter of Pharaoh sent her attendant to pick up the basket. That's what you've written in the Chumash. That's what it says. But does that convey what the Rebbe Shlomo expects of us? What kind of people we're supposed to become? It's very two-dimensional. But the Torah is not two-dimensional. It's about Divrei Elokim Chayim. It's about the Dvar Hashem and meeting HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is so much more profound than just whatever you're going to write on the paper. And if what you write on the paper is the extent of Torah and you're going to give it to the Greek king, that's going to be a big tragedy. And we'll close with this amazing mimer. Take a look on the last page, a piece from Rav Kolonimus Kalman, Hashem Yikom Domo Zchus Yagalina, from the Pia Setzner, talking about Yom HaKadosh HaKlali, even though we know when the Pia Setzner's Yortzeit is, on the 4th of Cheshvan. So Pia Setzner writes here, he says, what does it mean on the Pasuk, based on the Gemara, fourth line in, V'dibar Hashem al Moshe ponim al ponim, Om Rab Yitzchak, Om Elo HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, I like, by the way, how Hashem called him by his first name. Ah, Moshe, right? No, let me tell you. Ani va'ata nazbir ponim bahalacha. You and I, Kiviyachal, he says, ah, Moshe, let's get a cup of tea. We're going to sit in your house. We're going to learn a shtigl Torah. We'll learn something. Nazbir ponim bahalacha. Let's... Hezber panim. He's like, oh, let's give an explanation. Let's learn through the sugya. Chavrusas kiviyachol. So the Pia Setzner wants to understand this phrase, nazbir panim, the face. Let's get acquainted. What does that mean? Says the Pia Setzner, hapashut v'hadrash. In this case, the pshat and the drash, olim b'kavon achas, they go together. Because, lo seichel bilvad yesh b'torah. The Torah, while it is unquestionably intellectually stimulating and brilliant, that's not the exclusive domain of Torah. It's not just intellect. Lo seichel bilvad, rak gam or elokus. It is the light of Hashem Yisbarach himself. Sha'al yedei ha-Torah nase bechinas v'diber ponim el ponim. That we literally, when we learn Torah, when we're sitting together here tonight at this table, Kiviyachol, the Rebbeinu Shlomo is sitting, like it says in the Mishnah Perkei Avos, right here between David and Yechiel, he has a good seat. And Kiviyachol, the Rebbeinu Shlomo is looking at us in the eyes, panim el panim. It's an experience. It's a personal experience. Panim el panim. And that's why he says, that's why, you know, The Gemara has an expression, God forbid, somebody who distorts Torah, it's called Megala Panim B'Torah Shalo Kalacha. You're distorting the face of Torah. Because the Panim of someone, that Maharal explains, reflects their Panim. The Panim is the expression of the Panim. Right? That's why a person, very often, their feelings are manifest on their face. The Maharal explains, Panim is Panim. So what he's saying to Moshe Rabbeinu is, I'll look you in the eye. Let's have a schmooze. Because when you learn Torah, it's like looking the Rebbeinu Shlomo in the eyes. It's looking at his face. It's the Or Panim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what we do when we learn. And that's what the Rebbe goes on to explain why this is relevant. This piece, actually, is the third of the sections that the Rebbe wrote. This piece was buried in the ghetto, survived the war. First piece was the Chovas HaTalmidim that he published before the war. Then there was Hachsharas Avreichim and Mavu Sha'arim. Those were hidden. That obviously didn't survive, but they did survive. So the Rebbe is telling us that when we learn Torah, we recognize that it's not just an intellectual exercise. So now we can understand how this fits with the whole shtickle Torah with the Greeks. Because Greeks were very intellectually not just influenced, they were intellectually oriented. They were looking for intellect. They were looking for Chachmas Yavan. So they say, you have a book of wisdom? We're interested. It's not necessarily a capricious act by Ptolemy. He's like, you have wisdom? We have Aesop's fables. We want to learn. We want to learn from you guys. So the Chacham said, we'll translate the Torah for you, but you don't understand. Torah is not Seichel. Torah is a Torah Schaim with Pnimis, with a whole experience of godliness. And if you try to study Torah devoid of spirituality, of Ruchnius, of Panim El Panim, so then you're going to actually end up not with light, not with aura of Torah, we're going to end up with darkness. And so the many Mefarshim talk about, it's bad to end on a bad note, but this is the end of the story. Many Mefarshim point out that Chodesh Teves is a difficult month. It's a difficult month. And now we can see how all of a sudden the whole fast day of Asar B'Teves tomorrow, we only fast one day, but we're commemorating so many different experiences. Whether it's from the Churban Habayis to the Holocaust to Jews, you know, obviously this Shimon HaKalponi is foreshadowing tons of Christian persecutions of Jews and the struggles that we had with Christianity over the centuries and the death of Ezra HaSofer. And now, thinking about the misrepresentation of Torah. So we can't end on something bad like that. So what's the answer? The answer is for us to always come back every year to say, so how do I connect to the Pnimius of Torah? How does Torah in Chodesh Teves, when it's dafka dark outside, how does it resonate with me, the aura of the Pnimius of Torah? And that's a journey. Every person needs to find for themselves how we can each connect to the Pnimius of Torah. Of course, we want to find the intellectual stimulation, and it's very rewarding, and we should access all the English materials that we can get. And, you know, the rabbi could tell you many, many great svarim, more than I know. But it's not just about the intellectual. It's making sure that the Pnim, the face of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's looking at us when we learn, that reflects kivyachol the inner essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we tap into that as well. So I hope everybody has an easy and meaningful fast tomorrow. Well, I will say, living in Chicago, it's the one day we're very grateful. Fast ends in 5 minutes. I don't know what time it starts, but it ends very early. 6:01, what time does the fast end?
5
o'clock.